G'day, man.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too. How are you?
Doing good.
You all set there?
Kind of. The audio is a little bit quiet, but I think we can make it work.
I could also speak up a bit. That may be helpful.
It's all good.
Hey, Dylan.
Doing great.
Hey, thanks. I really appreciate it. I was doing a little bit of looking around in the last day or so, and I noticed you don't do many of these sorts of things. I imagine you get inundated with requests, but you don't seem to do a lot of, oh, here's a conversation with Jerry Rig Everything. So I really appreciate you jumping in and, you know, spending some time with us on our little podcast here.
Yeah, no problem. Time is usually pretty hard to find, but you were pretty straightforward with your invitation, and I thought it'd be a fun activity. So
thanks, man. Yeah, so that's it. So if people want to approach you, got to be straightforward. That's the way to be.
Yeah, if your email is longer than like three sentences, it's too long.
I tend to play on that New Zealand thing as well. People think that, oh, talk to New Zealand, that could be kind of fun. So I tend to use that. It's like my privilege. I have New Zealand privilege. People seem to like to talk to us Kiwis for some reason.
And you have a great accent, so.
Thanks, man. Hey, I don't think, with all my podcasting I've ever done, and I've been doing it since 2008 in various iterations, I don't think I've ever spoken to anyone from Utah. I think this is the first time. And I love, one of the things I love about your videos is, especially when you're outside, is the scenery. Utah looks like the most beautiful place. Lots of flat land, but also in the horizon, snowy mountains almost all the time. It looks absolutely gorgeous.
Yep. I've lived in a lot of places across the United States, like Missouri and Colorado, and I visited a lot of the states, and I always come back to Utah. Like, it's something about living in the mountains is really fun.
I mean, I don't want to sound like an idiot. You know, when you're on a different part of the world, you kind of go, well, it's like a lot of people say to us here in New Zealand, because we're a small country, oh, I know someone from New Zealand. Do you know such and such? But like, there is still 5 million of us. But because we have that, and so I don't want to sound like that kind of idiot. But the two things I sort of know about Utah is being a big basketball fan, especially of the 90s era, John Stockton and Karl Malone for the Jazz. But also, you know, the current crop as well. But also, it's a kind of center of the Mormon church as well. Is that right?
Yeah. So the Mormons came over here. They used to be headquartered back in Missouri, like, you know, back in the pioneer days. And then they came over here, you know, 150 years ago or something. And this has kind of been like the center of Mormonville ever since.
Just for any particular reason or just because it's the most beautiful place to be? That'll do.
Yeah, you know, God's country. This is where we decided to set up camp.
Very cool. Hey, well, listen, I'm really excited to talk to you, and I'm loving your videos. I don't know quite which order to go in this, and I'm not a very professional broadcaster, Zach. You'll have to deal with that.
No worries.
Because I discovered you through your videos with your now wife, and I guess I was wondering, not that it matters. I'm not saying like, oh, it was good for your channel to meet this person, but I'm assuming I'm not unique. Did you get quite a big bump in your audience when you started doing those electric bike videos? Because I figure if that's where I came across you, then that must have been happening around the world. If it was showing up on my algorithms, it must have been happening everywhere. Was that a time that you saw a significant growth in your channel, even though it was already a very successful channel as it was?
Not really. I would say it was consistent. So like the growth rate was consistent for a long time, and then we started just branching out and doing a little bit more of the not a wheelchair stuff.
Right.
But I only post probably like one of those videos every year, give or take. And so most of my content is still focused around, you know, taking apart cell phones or electric vehicles. Those are a pretty big part of the kind of content that I make. But definitely, like when I made that particular unit with the two electric bikes welded together, I wasn't expecting, you know, that many views. I think that video has like 8 million views on it or something. But it turns out, you know, there's a lot of people who actually want a lower cost off-road wheelchair. And so we've kind of turned that into a business.
Just so you know, 11.3 million. You're only off by about 3.5 million, but you know.
How many does it have?
11.3. I just had
11. Oh, wow. See, it's growing.
I, and this is, it's, it's, I don't know how algorithms work in YouTube. You probably do. This is your job. I think you've got over 7 million followers overall, sort of social media. But I've watched this three times over the past, since you released it, because I watched it. And then I was like, man, you should, like, my kids and me watched it because it was such a cool video. And then I think I showed it to a third person as well. So I don't know if that's unusual or unique, but it's the kind of thing that it's a really engaging movie. We're going to talk about all your kind of content and what you do, but this one was so engaging. It just seemed that it's dragged us in multiple times watching it, because then my kids want us to know about it, and then they want us to know about your guys' story, and then, you know, so it was a great video. I mean, a great video apart from anything else.
Well, thanks. Yeah, we definitely weren't anticipating the huge rush of, you know, people watching it, but we're very happy about it.
So let's be honest, guy to guy. You met this lovely, amazing woman. You know, you're building this bike. Was it a bit of a flex for you to kind of go, look, I'm a bit of all right. No, look, you can. This is I'm a good guy to be around. Look what I can do for you. You know, you got the skills.
Yeah. So it took me. So when we first started dating, like I was way more interested in her at first than she was interested in me. So it did take me a few weeks to, like, you know, be like, hey, you know, I do have a real job. Like, I am able to, like, provide. And I think this video was a couple months into it. So at this point we were already, you know, liking each other a little bit. But yeah, it definitely helps when, when you can make stuff. So.
And you've already referenced the not a wheelchair videos. This idea went on to become like a mass-produced product. Now, I watched another video on that just the other day, the blue machine, the not a wheelchair machine. That was probably a year or so ago. Is that still something that's continued on? Is that something you've put into production and are selling?
Oh, yeah. So the off-road, because, like, kind of like what I mentioned in that video, how, you know, they're not – off-road wheelchairs are so expensive, you know, starting, yeah, you know, $10,000, $20,000, and, like, that's out of anyone's price range. Like, you'd rather buy a car than buy an off-road wheelchair at that point.
Yeah, for sure.
And so when we came out with our rig, which is what we're calling the four-wheeled, you know, off-road wheelchair made out of bike parts, that we're selling for, I think, $4,500. So half the price of other off-road wheelchairs with, like, twice the speed and twice the range of other off-road wheelchairs.
Wow.
And so it's a game-changing. And, like, I'm biased because, you know, we made it. But at the same time, like, anyone can price this out and see that this is a game-changing piece of technology. And so I only made that one launch video about it because we've been sold out for, like, 2 years straight.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. So,
like, I mean, the pandemic didn't help, but, like, we haven't been able to keep up with how many people have wanted these things. So it's super lucky that the largest trike manufacturer in the United States is just, like, 30 minutes from my house.
Yeah.
And so we partnered with them. They have, like, the purchasing power to get, like, huge discounts on all of the tires and all of the different components, the electric motors that we need. And they've been assembling these things nonstop for 2 years now. So
I don't know if it was you that said this, because I watch a lot of videos, especially around EVs. You know, I dream of an EV one day. But, you know, especially here in New Zealand, because we're so far away, you pay a lot more for things because it's just purely getting them here and it's not the population to service, you know, selling 200,000 Teslas sort of thing. So it might have been you that said this, but it might have been another commentator, that it's very easy to make a prototype. It's very hard to move into mass production. And that was said about EVs, one of the videos. Was that you that said that, or am I hearing that off someone else?
I have said it a couple times, okay, but I was probably quoting Elon, because Elon says that, you know, every time he gets an interview. So
when you made a prototype of this, how you did that process? You had to go through the process of prototype to mass production. How hard was that?
It was lucky that the Utah Trikes just lives right down the road from me, because they have been around for, I think, like 10 or 15 years, and they're the largest. So they've already gone through production, the growing pains of production. They already had a large facility. Once they started making our machine, though, they had to get a whole new production facility up and running to handle everything. Plus, through the pandemic, apparently everyone was buying bikes, because it was just like, you know, hey, everyone go outside more, because that's the only thing you can do.
Yeah.
So they grew a lot over the pandemic. But right now we are developing another off-road wheelchair that would be kind of a companion to the rig. And that one I've been working on since for the last 2 years. And we are going to be manufacturing that ourselves. And so I do have to like, I have to plan for like hundreds and hundreds of units while making one unit. And so it does get a little more brain powers involved when you're planning on mass producing something.
And that means what? It'll be your factory and your employees and literally manufacturing the whole thing.
Yeah, because the rig was made out of bike parts, and so it was super, super easy for Utah Trikes to just kind of transition into manufacturing that. But this other invention is going to be more like tank treads and stuff like that, a little more off-roady. And so there is not made out of bike parts, but it is still electric, and we will, it'll be interesting to see how that one comes out.
So more of a bespoke unit, ground up, building everything, building the frame, putting it all together.
Yeah.
How exciting is that? Can you believe where your life is right now? I mean, you kind of started on YouTube just under a decade ago, and looking back, if you put them in reverse order, it looks like most of your first videos were primarily mechanical ones with a few phone ones throwing in there, and then it grew into being about phone and then other things. Like sitting right here, right now, talking to this idiot on the other side of the world about what you do. Can you believe the life you have?
I mean, I'm super excited. When I first started my YouTube channel, I had no idea, what it was going to become. I knew I wanted to make videos. I knew I wanted to kind of like help other people with their projects. Because like once you see something done, it's way easier to do it yourself. And so that was my motivation behind, making car repair videos and working on motorcycles and things like that. And then I realized like it was a conscious decision. Like I was like, hey, my videos are getting viewed, but if I really want to take this to the next level and turn it more into like a business, then I have to make content. I have to make videos about things that more people are interested in. And so that's when I went from like fixing Jeeps, which not a whole lot of people have, into fixing cell phones, which everyone has. And then, a year later, I made the transition into durability testing cell phones. And then a couple of years after that, I made the transition into more electric vehicles. And so each kind of phase of my YouTube channel branched out into a larger audience of people that would be willing to watch that content. And so, and yeah, it's been a fun journey. And I'm really excited, but I'm really excited to be where I'm at, but also it's a series of conscious decisions to slowly change the course of my channel.
Because if people came across your first, let's say, 40 videos, I mean, there's a little bit of kind of a cell phone tomfoolery in there, but they'd think, yeah, that was a mechanics channel. So it's really interesting to see how the transition has come, which of course bodes the question. You've talked about this journey. Well, what I'm not, this is normally a last question in an interview, and I'm sorry to bring it in now, but like, where to from here? Like, because we're talking about the journey you've been on, where do you want to go? Where is it going to go?
Well, I mean, the not a wheelchair thing, I think that's going to be my long term, because like obviously YouTube has a cycle, I guess. And so you see creators, come up, get big, and then slowly phase out on their own accord, or like phase out because, the audience just isn't interested anymore. And so, I mean, right now I feel like YouTube's going strong and I'm super happy with it, but I've been doing it for 8 years already, and I don't think I'll ever stop, but at the same time, I do think there's going to be a time in my life where I'm like, videos have been fun, but I need something else. And I think the Not a Wheelchair project is going to be that thing. But until then, maybe that's 10, 20 years down the road. I don't really know. But until then, over the last summer, I've kind of gone back to the whole mechanical roots of the channel, and I've taken a military Humvee, taken out all of the components and made it electric, which is like combining all the spheres of my channel, technology, mechanical, designing, and putting it into one, and like people have really loved that project. So
I've been I, that's one of the things I've been watching. One of the things I've been looking at is you building your Humvee, including, like, I can tell you from watching them, I think the first time you made it and it was active and was able to drive, you couldn't get it over the little lump because there wasn't enough torque in the actual wheels to get it going. And yet, so I've watched them, because like I said, I'm down for look at me showing your advert whilst we're looking at other things about your
It's going to
KiwiCo.
be sponsored by KiwiCo.
Appropriate to have the KiwiCo thing going on now. So no, it's great. And I showed this is what I think my one that I showed to the kids actually. And I was gonna I purely by chance I'm gonna ask you, this was a military grade, that was the gun turret, yeah? Yeah. Above your head, that's actually, it was a military grade one, because that's what I assumed, seeing that being welded in there. So this was one, was it in Afghanistan? Did a tour of this actual vehicle?
Yeah, so I'm not sure where the actual, like, what the history is of it. But when I did get it for the first time, and like I was washing it out, there was red sand everywhere. And so I do feel like it had some adventures. And there's bullet casings all over the place. The links that hold bullets together for machine guns, like those were scattered all over the insides. Like it was doing something cool.
Did you get like a little amount of that red sand, put it in one of those little glass bottles, and you could hang it from the rear vision mirror? Because it's like,
I
that's
should
always,
have.
yeah.
I should have. I did not, though.
No, it's a very exciting thing to watch, and it's a very exciting thing to see. I do have to say, though, I'd be interested to know, sort of, it's not a question about criticism, but it's a question about when people watch, are there other people like me who freak out when they hear this kind of
And are
noise?
not popping out like we see on the Samsung devices.
This.
The top of the phone has some Harman Kardon branding.
Oh, no. No,
Cornhole,
no,
IR
no.
blaster.
We hate that noise. So yours, I think yours must be a unique channel that does the that gets a brand new phone and torches it like this, the way. I don't know if there's many others that do it, but I watch it, and of course, probably like most people, the first thing I do is, no, don't do that to a new phone. What are you doing? But then that scratch noise always gets me. I shudder at the sight of it. Do you get much feedback from basically torturing phones? I think this video, correct me if I'm wrong, you showed the early iteration of what you did to the previous phone. Yeah, look, so there it is in your hand over there. So that's what you did to the other one. Which doesn't look particular. I mean, I'm not sure what kind of usage that would go through for a human being to end up like that. But yeah, torturing phones for a living seems to be a good part of what you're doing now.
Yeah, so I mean, there is some shock value to the durability tests, which is kind of like if you watch like my very, very first durability test, I actually muted all of the sound and just did a voiceover. But then I realized that if I left the ambient sound in, like people really liked that. And even though there's some complaints about the metal on metal scratching, at the same time, the ambient noise is what keeps a lot of people. And so it's a conscious decision to leave it in there.
Wow. Well, and I mean, like, you as a young fellow at college, you worked at a cell phone repair shop, didn't you? So you had a background in this. Is that all it took to start playing with phones and breaking them apart and looking at them and repairing them? Because it seems like something that would be quite a specialist position. Or is this all really? I mean, I've heard you explain the word jerry rig. I don't know whether it's a Commonwealth thing, like we're part of the Commonwealth, we're part of England, like Canada is. I think all of us probably know what to jerry rig something is. It's a common phrase, but I've heard you explain it, because maybe it's not so common in the US. Have you just basically jerry rigged your skills to teach yourself how to do it, and be good at it?
Yeah, so I went to college, and I have a degree in business. So I do not have a degree in like cell phone repair or technology or design or anything like that. Business is what my degree is in. But growing up, like I was always, it was always fun to like use tools. Like I was always building my own computers. I was building my own tree houses. Working with wood was always fun. In high school, I had a class where we would build a house from the ground up, and we would learn how to do drywall and paint and finish work and coping and all that stuff. And that was super, super fun for me. So tools have always come easy. And luckily, I was in a spot 8 years ago, back when cell phones were really easy to take apart. And so, taking apart the HTC Evo 4G back in like 2000, I don't know, maybe 12 or something like that, only required like 8 Phillips head screws, and you were inside, no glue, no nothing. You could replace the screen in 10 minutes. And so I kind of grew with the transition into glass-backed, glued shut phones. I think the first one I actually took apart was the Samsung Galaxy S6 that was glued shut. And I was super nervous to take apart that one because, when I was first starting my channel, not a whole lot of money's coming in, but I still want to make a video about the phone and how to take it apart and disassemble it. And so I was very, very careful pulling the glass back off of that one.
Because I understand you basically purchase most, if not all, of the phones that you test. I'm wondering what the manufacturers think of you. Like, what does HTC think of you? What does Apple think of you? Because basically what you're doing is you are treating how I see those scratch tests is, if I left this phone in my pocket for 12 months, it would probably get the kind of wear and tear that Zach puts this phone through in, you know, 12 minutes or 12 seconds or whatever it is. That's how I sort of think about it. Right. So how have the manufacturers responded to you when you go, ah, look at this, scratch, 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 scratch. It's really easy to scratch. That, do you get any input from them? Do you get them going, well, we know ours will survive, so I'll send them one of our phones? Or do they basically hate you and hate what you do?
For the most part, like, Apple has never really talked to me. I know Samsung has gone out of their way to make sure that I don't get their phone early. But for the most part, manufacturers, like even most of the Chinese ones, like Xiaomi and Huawei, like, they actually just send me their phones and what happens, happens. But if it's like Apple or Samsung, I buy those myself. But some of like the less popular phones, I think they just are under the opinion that any press is good press.
Right.
And like most phones survive. Like I would say like 9 out of 10 phones are going to be like, you know, they're going to pass the durability test with flying colors and not snap in half. But every now and then you get that one that's just like, you know, not structurally sound.
What was the last one that was not structurally sound? Can you remember?
The OnePlus 10 Pro is the one that you showed earlier in that clip. That was the one that snapped in half.
So are you, I didn't see the preview for the video for the actual one, but how did you, let's just bring it up for people who are watching. If you're listening, you'll have to go to the YouTube channel to have a look at it. How did you end up doing that to the phone? Did you just literally give it a bend?
That was it. Just my two hands. I don't know if it's next to me or not. Nope. I don't have that phone here, but this is a different phone. But yeah, I just take the phone, bend it from the front and the back and just snapped it in half. Just my hands. And most phones survive. Most phones are super, super strong and rigid, and that phone obviously was not.
You're obviously a lovely human being, a delightful man, and so generous with your time. Is there any part of you, when someone has the wrong phone, that you kind of look down your nose at them and you kind of go, ah, you shouldn't have got that phone, that's a poor choice, you know? Do you judge people? Is what I'm asking a little bit, Zach. Do you judge them just a little bit?
Back in the day, I would say yes. Back when Apple was more, I feel like back with the iPhone, like 4, 5, and 6, Apple was just charging an insane amount of money and not giving their customers very much.
Yeah.
And so I'd always like be like, all right, you could take that same amount of money and get, you know, 2 Android phones that can still do more than an iPhone. But since like the iPhone, I would say with the 10, that's when they started like actually being more worth the buck, I guess, more worth the dollar. And that's also when Samsung and other companies started to just charge a ton of money for phones. Like, I think paying $1,000 for a cell phone is just dumb. You know, it's like, and I tell people all the time that, like, you know, there's no reason to have the latest and greatest smartphone. Like the phone, I was looking for it, but it's right here. I'm talking on it. My phone that I use for my everyday stuff is a Samsung Galaxy Note 10, which has been out for over 2.5 years now. And so, like, there is no reason to go out and buy the latest and greatest phone when 2.5-year-old phones or even cheaper phones do the exact same thing. They all scroll through Facebook the same way. They have the same Twitter feed. And, like, not many people are using, you know, 100% of their phone. Most people are using, you know, like 10 or 15% of their phone's capabilities. Most people are just on social media most of the time.
You seem to be that way. That seems to be a part of your personality, though. Like, I watched the video about you getting a new truck and you didn't go out and get something straight away. You drove your old truck into the ground. And I wonder if you said did business at college, if that all comes into it financially, you're trying to make wise decisions as well. And that can be the same as a phone. You know, the latest and greatest doesn't. I'm not the same as you completely, but I use a phone for 3 or 4 years and then I'll get whatever the new one is. And then I'll use it for 3 or 4 years. I could at that point get one that was 12 months old. It would be a better financial decision, but that's the cycle I kind of work in. But that seems to be a part of your personality or character, that the wise financial decisions are something that you're into as well.
Yeah. I think, and I was reading, I forget who was saying it, but like, I don't know, just the time value of money is something that's on my head. Like every single day, it's like, if I spend all of my money now on something really nice, then I have less money to work with to build something greater. I think the quote was something about like using the weekends to build the life you want instead of using the weekends to get away from the life you have. And so just the time value of money is just something I think about every day.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've had people tell me before about business and about running a business that you always spend tomorrow's money. Like you don't spend, sorry, you always spend yesterday's money. I got that completely the wrong way around. You always spend yesterday's money. Tomorrow's money hasn't come in yet. So don't go out spending that. That's basically a credit card. Even today's money, the money in business you make today, it's not in the, not necessarily in the bank yet, but yesterday's money, the stuff that's come in there, that's the stuff that you have access to spend because you know it's there and it's available and it's a way to actually move forward without relying on tomorrow's money, which may or may not come in. As we all know in business, if you're someone who invoices, tomorrow's money is a nice ideal, but it's but it's not guaranteed, whereas yesterday's money is already there. So that's something I try and do and try and live by as well.
Yeah.
Seeing you're someone who is so involved around cell phones and stuff, I've always been confused as to why the increase in price in cell phone technology. Like if you look at most technology, it decreases in price. Like I always tell the story, I remember someone who made quite a lot of money in the stock market when plasma TVs came out. He bought the first ever plasma TV. And it was probably a 32 inch, maybe it was a 40 inch, and it was sitting, it was $30,000. And everyone's talking about the price of EVs, and if they're unattainable for some people today, they will come down. Technology seems to work in a way that prices drop, other than cell phones. You talk about spending $1,000 on the phone is ridiculous. The latest iPhones in New Zealand, probably the biggest storage ones as well, are $2,000, 2,000 New Zealand dollars, which is about probably $1,300 or $1,400 US dollars. I guess that includes the having to get them over here and it costs more to land them, yada, 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 yada. But I've always been, and I know that they're more advanced and they do more and that kind of stuff, but I've always been confused. It seems to be the one technology that increases in prices. And I wonder how much of that, and I'd like your opinion on this, is based around, you know, what they do and what they're made of and how they operate costs more versus they've become a necessity. So these companies are just driving up the prices because they can.
Yeah. I mean, I think you nailed it right there. I think that's mostly what it is. And like everyone needs a phone, but it's also one of the most abused pieces of technology on the planet. And I would bet, like, you know, laptops come down in price, you know, cars come down in price, but you're way more likely to like crack your cell phone screen than you are to, you know, wreck your car. It's just cell phones are more easily damaged, and which means you have to buy a new one. If you're not replacing or fixing the old one, you have to buy a new one more often, which I think, you know, the whole supply and demand thing makes them cost more. But I do agree with you. I think they should be way cheaper.
Yeah, I don't. It's never made sense to me. It also, I'm assuming that you'll be someone who'll be totally into the right to repair movement. And I see there's been a decision by Apple in the last few weeks where they've said they're going to release, I don't know, what was 600 things that are now going to be available to purchase. You must be a big supporter because of what you do of the right to repair.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's something that, you know. So I do a lot of traveling and stuff. And like, I go to different places to review different cars. And like, I travel for my job a lot. And the world nowadays is just way different than it was even like 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah.
I remember like my mom saying that when she grew up, it was very common for people to just throw trash out their window. And you know, people just did that. And like, that wasn't a big deal back then. And that's probably true, but like the world, the global population is like doubled in the last like 50 years. And so if everyone still threw trash out their window, like we would just be covered in trash. And so the right to repair is just going along with that. Like if we keep on this same trajectory and this same trend of just like using it and then throwing it away instead of fixing it or recycling it, like we are just gonna, there's only so much space left for trash. And so there has to be another solution. And if we don't find it soon, it's, you know, I also think about that every day. So,
yeah, I had an experience with Apple because they own Beats now, obviously, Beats by Dr. Dre. And I had a broken hinge on one of my headphones. And I've got a mate who's, I'd call him a mini Jerry Rig everything. He's one of those guys that can do everything. You know, the closed system Macs that you're not supposed to be able to get until he opens up and he puts new hard drives in and that kind of stuff. So he's very, very clever. And I know that he could have fixed it for me and ordered a hinge off AliExpress or something like that and just done it. But I thought I'd take it into the Apple store here in Dunedin and just ask at least anyway, and what, it's an Apple authorized dealer, take it in and ask anyway. And they told me that they could send it away to repair it, and it would cost $450, which is actually a little bit more than what the headphones cost me to buy just for the
right.
So I'm like, and the first thing when I heard about their right to repair was I looked to see if they had any Beats hinges on there. They don't, unfortunately, but because I've still got them and I haven't got around to getting that aftermarket hinge off AliExpress yet, but I will. So yeah, I think it's almost criminal, a business or a an organization. I can't imagine a car company saying, you know, well, mind you, Tesla, hi, but a everyday car company sort of going, you know, you can't put that carburetor in this engine, please, it's not going to work, you must send it back to us, and ours are three times the price. No one would stand for it. So I'm not sure why we stand for it in the tech world.
Yeah. Something's got to change, you know, this, yeah. It can't go on for much longer considering everything that's going on environmental wise.
So you've just talked about trash and throwing things out the window. Is a part of what you're doing, showing people how to keep their items longer, to repair things, is a part of that an environmental message for you? Is that something that's quite important?
Yeah. So, I mean, it seems at first glance, it seems counterproductive or counterintuitive, like, oh, he's breaking phones, but yet he talks about, you know, keeping them and repairing them. But if you remember back towards the beginning of our conversation, where every point in my YouTube career was like a conscious decision, yeah. I knew that like people aren't going to go watch a phone repair video unless they have a phone that needs repaired. So it's a smaller group of people. But more people would watch a video of a durability test pre-purchasing who are thinking about buying a certain kind of phone. So it's like a much bigger group of people willing to watch that kind of video. And, you know, if I can grow my audience, I can grow the amount of people that I can communicate to about repair. And they would like, oh, so this guy is doing a durability test, but also he shows how to fix phones, so I can come back later and watch that down the road. Even if they don't break their phone immediately, maybe 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years down the road, when they have a new phone, they still know where they can come find tutorials and, you know, repair guides and stuff like that. And yeah, if it's not with me, just knowing that it's possible to open up their phone.
And that's really clever, right? That's a really clever business model. Is that something that you actually did on day one consciously, something you've discovered along the way? Because as you say, I mean, I watch a lot of independent news from America on the internet, like YouTube channels and stuff. And you can see the guys that are doing the same thing they were doing 5 years ago, some of them are starting to tail off. Or you can see the guys who get a big bump during the election year, and then they tail off during, because they're doing the same things. That idea of doing something new. I think about, and I think we would all agree, he's probably the best, if not one of the best, is the Mr. Beasts of this world, how they've just evolved with, you know, new things and doing new things and getting bigger and making new things. And I saw him in an interview the other day talking about one of the things they do now is Mr. Beast had this epiphany that people who speak English are such a small percentage of the overall world, that they've now got centers set up that they overdub all of their videos in Spanish and in Mandarin and in Portuguese. And so he's opened his market up to, you know, another 80% or whatever it is of the world. So it's an intentional movement forward. Obviously he's got a team of 200 behind him as well, but
right.
What you're doing, was that kind of day one intentional, or has it been what you've discovered as you've gone down this journey over the last decade?
It's intentional as I've gone down the journey. So like I'll be laying in bed at like 2 o'clock in the morning and I'll be like, oh, that's a good idea. And then I'll, you know, start implementing that new direction or that new kind of thing while still maintaining everything that I've done before. Cause like, obviously I feel like, you know, with social media and everything, people just want to connect with someone online. And so like, if I, for some reason just started like a beauty channel, like changed everything and just started doing makeup tomorrow on my channel, like I would lose everyone that I connected with for the last 8 years. I'm not saying makeup is a direction I'm ever going to head in. It's just an example, but you know, so like I still, like when I started the Hummer project, I'm still doing all of the phone stuff.
Yeah.
I'm bringing something else in, seeing how it works. And then, you know, if it works, great. If not, also great. And then I have a second channel as well called Zach's Jerry Rig, where I just throw like little side projects and stuff. Like I patched a cement hole in my deck the other day and I just threw it on the second channel. So it's also important that it's like, because when you're an entrepreneur, there's that quote that says that you get to pick your own hours to work as long as it's all of them. And so, and you probably know this since you're running your own podcast and stuff, but yeah, if you don't enjoy the process of making the videos, then it's or if you don't enjoy the process of running your business, then it's never going to be successful. And so like, I also only make videos that I would personally enjoy watching, which makes it, you know, more fun to make and more fun to watch and more fun to let other people come hang out with me.
Dude, I think that's an answer. You know, like I've been in broadcasting in general, like radio and television stuff, since the late 1990s. And everything I've ever done, it's all, even when I've been working for another company in a radio show, say, it's always been, what would I want to listen to? And you build, I build what I want to do and what I'm enjoying with, and hopefully it finds an audience. And that's sort of, it's the, if the build it and they will come sort of idea. So yeah, I get it. Although, I was going to say, I don't know about the makeup thing for you, but looking at some of your photos from the past, you could possibly do a hair thing. Like, I mean, if you, because actually that photo there, and if you're listening, you'll have to, again, go to YouTube and have a look what we're looking at, is one of the most spectacular transitions of, I'm assuming, college hair to a grown-up look that I've ever seen in my life. So you could do something, maybe not with makeup, but maybe with, you know, memories of afros. Just saying, it could be something you bring out. I think, and if you don't drop the other stuff, it could be a new market, maybe.
If they ever come out with a technology that transfers your beard to my head, then we can go back to the Afro realm. But yeah,
that's a spectacular look. I did want to know though, you're talking about, you know, having to continue on with these things that you're already doing and adding something new. Obviously, that means at some point you got to stop something, because if you keep adding, there's not enough hours in the day. Are you at that point yet? Like, even though you're not doing. It doesn't look like you're really doing mechanical stuff anymore, as in the carburetors and that sort of thing, but you are therefore doing the Hummer stuff, which is sort of the same, the modern version of what you started with. Have you got to a point of having to drop anything, or is that just around the corner? Because if you keep adding, then all of a sudden there literally won't be enough hours in the day to do everything.
Yeah. So when I was single, I would probably do like two or three videos a week. Like I would hit it pretty hard. But now that I'm married and I have a kid, I'm only able to make about one video a week with everything that we have going on. Travel and, you know, so my little boy's named Cyrus. He's a full-time job right there.
Nice. Congratulations on that.
And then as well, like we just bought a new facility not a wheelchair, so we can start manufacturing our other products. So we have two different product lines that we're planning on launching either later this year, first part of next year. And that's those two products, and the new facility is taking up a lot of my time. So.
And so it sounds like you're getting to that point where you're full up. You're starting to get full up. Families. Yeah. I from a distance followed part of your story from, like I said, when I found those electric mountain bike videos. So I know it's delayed and I don't know you, but congratulations on what's happened there. Congratulations on the wedding and the child. And it's great to watch. And I'm sure you know this, people who watch your videos, like we were always taught in radio that people don't listen necessarily. I did talkback, so I had people calling in all the time, and they ironically don't listen for the callers, even though you'd know if they were without the callers, you'd have no show. They listen for the host. Right. That's it. They're invested in the host. So the best host, it doesn't matter who they've got on the phones, because the listening people want to join that person's story. And I feel you're one of those people that I watch on the internet that we're invested in your story. And so it's great to watch that pan out. And then maybe you could do makeup, because if we're invested in you, it kind of doesn't matter what you do. I mean, you know, just an idea. Maybe Cyrus and Cambry could do a makeup tutorial with you, and it would just be a new part of the investment in you and your, we have a word in New Zealand called whānau. Whānau means family. It's sort of extended family. It's the group around you. So when I was about to say for you and your whānau, but you need to understand what that means. So could be a new path anyway, because we're invested in you as we watch you on the internet.
And it also has to go back to what you enjoy doing, and I don't think makeup is going to be my thing. I don't think it is.
Very, very fair. Hey, speaking of your family, your whānau, what do you guys do for fun? It's a full-time job having kids, and I get all that. And what's a normal week look like for you guys? What do you like to do as the Jerry Rig Everything family? Mr. and Mrs. Jerry Rig Everything.
So we have my property here. We have a little barn, and we have two miniature horses. So during the summers, it's taking care of the horses, the chickens, and also we have a garden out back. That's always fun for us. We take the rig out for fun little drives. We're in Utah, so we have all these mountains around us and lots of outdoor activities. But also, I mean, it's pretty chill. Like we stay up to date on all the new Marvel. What's that new one that just came out with the moon? You know what I'm talking about?
On Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Moon Knight. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So we always, once a week, we always get together. My sister and her husband also live in an apartment in our basement. So we get together at least once a week and watch like a little show together, make some popcorn. We always, instead of microwaving popcorn, I take the popcorn kernels and some oil and make them over the stove, and they always taste super good.
Yeah, that's actually what did we watch last night? We were it's the one with Sandra Bullock and the guy from Magic Mike. I forget his name right now.
Oh, I think I know. Oh, they go on some like treasure hunt or something like that. Yeah.
We watched that last night and we had popcorn. So that's what made me think about it. So, nice. So hanging out with the family time is obviously a big thing. Watching Marvel movies, are you a Marvel or a DC guy? Is that something that you've committed to one side or the other?
DC is really cool, but Marvel does make better movies. So
what about, have you seen the Batman yet? Are you going to check it out?
Yeah. Saw it. Super good. I don't know. I mean, it was great to watch once. I don't know if I would ever sit down and watch it a second time though, but like the Marvel movies, like you can watch those over and over again.
Yep. I just rewatched Guardians 1 and 2 in the last 2 weeks again, because you're right. You can watch them again. That's an interesting thing you say about watching them again, because actually the Batman's with Heath Ledger. I could watch that.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So that's a really interesting perspective. If you watch it again, that makes it a kind of classic, I guess, doesn't it?
Right. So tell me, so you watched the Batman, right? Did you watch it in theaters?
I haven't seen the Batman yet. No.
Okay.
It's on my list, obviously.
Because one thing that bugs me a lot lately, and I don't know if it's just like my TV and my speakers or something like that, but when I'm watching a show, the audio is like, some scene will be really, really loud, and then the very next scene will be super quiet. And so I'm always adjusting my volume on the TV. And I feel like the Batman was one of the worst offenders of that varying volume that I've watched in a long time. I was always adjusting up or down.
I will definitely have to have a good look at that. One of the things I was very keen to look at with the Batman is how they actually made it. And I was just trying to look for the scenes while I was talking to you, but they wanted to make as many sort of real world places and have as little green screen as possible. And they set up a rig. I don't know if you've seen these, where basically there was a complete wraparound stage, which was all screens. Yeah. So rather than being a green screen, they had the cities projected there. And that also gave ambient light back to them. So I haven't seen it yet, but I want to have a look at what they do. And I want to look at what they're about with that and see if it makes a huge difference. I'm getting a lot of good feedback about it and about the feel of it. In fact, no, I've had a lot. Most people say it's a really good movie.
And that it's good for sure. Yeah. Just not watching it twice. Good.
So it's good enough. Was that a movie one for you? Was that an in cinema one for you?
No, I'm just here at the house.
So that's on what, HBO Max? Is that where you guys watch it on?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't have HBO Max in New Zealand. So if we're going to watch it online, mind you, it's now available, isn't it? You can kind of buy it on YouTube. I actually noticed that the other day. And how's life in general? I mean, I've seen that you've bought yourself a new truck and you've got yourself an electric truck and you're building a Hummer. What's the daily driver at the moment for you?
Still the Rivian. So the Rivian was the first electric truck that, I came from a Tacoma. And so a smaller truck is kind of like what I go for. I did just take a spin in the Ford F-150, their new electric truck, and that truck is going to be a game changer for a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the lightning, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, if I could wave a magic wand, my friend, if I could wave a magic wand, that would be in my driveway when it arrives in New Zealand.
It is going to be the cheapest electric truck out there. I think it starts at like 40,000 US.
Yeah, well, I guess you add another 50% on to make it 60,000 New Zealand.
That's tough.
You've got to bring it over here. It probably makes it 90. It'll probably be 90 over here for the cheapest version. I mean, like, I'm pretty sure. I actually spoke to Tesla the other day, and I'm not sure what the X retails for in America. What is, do you have any idea, approximately?
I know it used to be right up around 100,000.
Yeah. So it's 200 here.
Wow.
So it becomes Ferrari money, you know. So that's the thing we've been rallying about. Like, everyone, the world is talking about fuel prices at the moment, but the thing we've been rallying about, I do a daily news show as well that live streams. We've been rallying about is, like, I would be in an electric vehicle tomorrow, but the price is just a bit exorbitant at the moment, and we're hoping, much like the plasma TV, much like that maybe in a few years from now it'll come down, because they seem to have got the technology right now. I mean, you're the expert, I should ask you. For a long while, you had the hybrids, and you had the early sort of other than Tesla, but the early sort of electric vehicles didn't have the range, the price that was seemed worthwhile. Whereas now, when we're talking about electric vehicles, I always go, for me, the two things that matter is the price and the range. Because, to be honest, if I can get to, you know, 60 miles or 100 Ks in 2.9 seconds, that doesn't matter. That doesn't have a practical application to it. It's got a fun application, but not necessarily a practical application. It seems that technology has got to those point where certainly the range is sorted out. We just need now the price for this part of the world to be sorted out, and then I think we'll all be in it.
Yeah, for sure. Ford did some marketing research when they were doing the, like, figuring out what range they needed for the Ford F-150 Lightning. And they said that with all of their fleet vehicles, because they're the largest manufacturer of fleet vehicles in the United States, they said 95% of their fleet vehicles drive less than 175 miles a day. Right. And so if you want to cover 95% of fleet vehicles, you just need a range over 175. And I'm not sure what that is in kilometers. You probably use those units or something, right?
Yeah, 175 miles. It's like 60 miles is 100 Ks. So 180 would be 300. So 300 kilometers, give or take. Cool. Yeah. So that's a lot for a fleet vehicle. That's Monday to Friday. That's 1,500 Ks. I guess that's the best part of 900 miles a week. That feel about right?
Yeah, but that was the most, like,
yeah,
the most people. Like, obviously, most trucks don't even drive, you know, half of that. So they were just saying if they wanted to cover 95%, that would be the max range they would need.
Yeah. How did the, I mean, with the real world application, I mean, you live in a part of the world, obviously, where there's snow on the ground for a portion of the year. How does the electric vehicle world now handle the cold? Because for a long time, it was like, well, you know, this is the ideal range they'll get when it's colder. It can affect the batteries. When it's, you know, the tire flake can affect the batteries. What does the cold do to it? And I live in a cold part of the world as well. So that's what I was asking the question.
Yeah. So most electric vehicles now, like all of the new Teslas, like the Tesla Model Y and the Rivian and the Ford F-150 and like the Ford Mustang Mach-E, all of them have battery heaters as well as battery coolers. And so it doesn't matter as much. Like, yeah, you're using, like, I don't know, 1,000 extra watts to run some heater, if that. But you're keeping the battery in the right temperature range where it's not going to decrease or lose capacity because of the cold anymore. It's going to maintain and be in that sweet spot. I don't remember what it is in Celsius, but I think it's like between like 60 and 80 degrees Fahrenheit is where it likes to be. So,
You are minus 20 in Harvard. So 80 would be minus 20. So 80 would be 30 Celsius, give or take. So that's probably 20 to 30, which is a pretty warm day. I mean, 30 degrees in New Zealand is a pretty warm day. 20 degrees is kind of lovely, temperate sort of condition. So
yeah,
if that feels about right for the Fahrenheit, I'm not an expert on that either. So if that feels about right.
Yeah. We're the weird ones when it comes to Fahrenheit. So
it's a strange thing in America. I don't quite get why the Fahrenheit's been stuck around. I mean, Celsius is so easy. We freeze at zero. We boil at 100, you know, it seems to be very easy. Whereas what are you guys, freeze at 31? Is that right? 31? Is
32 freeze? Close.
32. 32 close. And
we boil at 212.
Yeah, so that's it's ridiculous. Although we're going through that whole transition, is that we're somewhat imperial and somewhat metric, because I'm 6'3", but I do my weight in kilograms, you know. So we don't know what stones or pounds necessarily are, but we know kilos and we know feet. So there's a, like, I still don't really know what a 4 kilo baby is, but I know what a 9 pounder is. So there's a strange, we're a strange bastardized version of language here. I think that's probably most of the world, or at least you guys have gone all in on one, and then, and don't mess around. Although it's interesting watching some of your guys, in fact, maybe even you, talking about an 8 millimeter wrench or an 8 millimeter screw. It comes out occasionally when you're, when people are talking about mechanical things. Sometimes when an American says, you know, a metric, it's like, oh, how do you know what an 8 millimeter is? What would anyone in America even know what that was?
Yeah.
What's next? What's next for Jerry Rig Everything? You've got your not a wheelchair. What's next for the channel? What can we expect for the rest of 2022?
I think so. The Hummer project still has a long way to go. So the last video that I made on the channel was driving it around after installing the cooling system. The very next day after I posted that video, I accelerated from 10 miles an hour to 30 miles an hour relatively quickly.
Right.
And we shredded the rear differential. So
when I first got my silver,
it is currently not mobile at the moment because it's mechanically decapitated in the back.
Wow.
So I did have to buy, I have to buy a new differential and then get it back working again. And then I need to like put doors on it, put the back on it, put some solar panels on the top. There's a whole lot of projects left with the Hummer. So
how long will that take? Like, I mean, obviously you probably can't project it completely, but would you expect the Hummer to be done by end of this year, end of next year? What's, is there a timeline for it?
I mean, the word done is hard to like pinpoint, but I want it to be like closed off by the winter at least, and then maybe have some like insulation inside the cab. Just because like driving around in an open air vehicle in the winter is, you can't go very far. So I want to have that done by this winter, but at the same time, like now that it's like complete, I would say the series itself is finished. And now we can just, you know, do little side projects on it and stuff, and take it more at a chill pace. Cause before I was working till like, you know, midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, every single night trying to get these videos out on time. And now I can like take a step back and live my life a little bit more, I guess.
Yeah. And just, and I'm assuming as you've spoken about winter, it's eventually all closed in. Cause it's that open thing. Are you going to, does it come already all closed in, and have you just removed bits, or does it come open?
Yeah. So mine came with cloth doors, which is fairly standard. But for some reason it was missing the back panel. And then it was also missing the hole cut out in the roof. Like they had just freshly taken that turret out. And so we put a piece of aluminum over the top and just riveted it into place. I'll probably leave that there just cause it looks cool. But yeah, when you get a military Hummer, it could be in any kind of, you know, state, mostly broken.
How many miles did it have on? I know that you've taken the engine out and stuff, but how many miles had it done?
On the odometer, it said right around 30,000.
Okay.
But they had also, you know, you never really know because they could do like an engine swap, or they could have swapped the deck and have been a different odometer. Like it could be, it's not something that you could really trust.
And if it was a unique and original 30,000 miles, I guess we would all assume they were pretty hard miles.
Yeah.
it's not you're driving to get up your groceries on a Sunday morning, 30,000 miles.
Yeah. And even if it was 30,000, like it's also like 27 years old. So even just sitting around for that many years is hard on it.
I was thinking as I was saying, what's next for you? I was also thinking, you know, the pandemic that's been going on for the last 2 years, a lot of what you do, are you like a one man band when it comes to your video? Have you got a team around you? Cause I'm assuming that if you are a one man band, that the pandemic didn't impact you that much for what you do, or do you have a team, and has it been impacting you over the last couple of years for your work, for what you do with your videos?
Luckily most everything I do. So I do have an editor, one of my friends from high school. He edits all of my videos. He came on probably like 5 years ago. So he does, a rough edit of everything, and then I get it back, polish it up, and then upload it to YouTube. So I probably, and then I have two or three guys on the Not a Wheelchair stuff right now on my side of it. And then obviously Utah Trikes has, you know, 30 or 40 people on their end. Yeah. So for the most part, it's a pretty small team, but I do have some guys around me helping out.
Very cool. And what's happening in Utah at the moment with said pandemic? Is it pretty much life back to normal? Are there still people, you know, masking up and conversations around vaccinations and boosters, or is that all sort of in the rear vision mirror now?
It's mostly in the rearview mirror now. I would say if I go outside and like go to Walmart or go to a store or something like that, I would say probably one out of five people, maybe one out of 10 people is wearing a mask. Okay. But Utah was never one of the places that like everyone was wearing a mask anyway. I would say we never peaked over like 50% mask wearing. Not super proud of our population on that front. But
I was going to ask, is that because you didn't really get hit by the pandemic, or is that because of attitudes towards masks? And I guess the second part of your statement answered that question prior to asking that question.
Yep. Mostly the attitudes, and you know, the whole being politicized thing was just super dumb. So
is that something that, I guess you are a public figure, and when it comes to the world, especially the number of people you have as subscribers through all your social medias and all your platforms, fairly high profile, certainly with a lot of people knowing who you are. Is that something that as a public figure you get pressured to do? Like, what do you think about? What do you think about when it comes to the politicization of some of these issues?
I mean, I don't know. Like on Twitter, I feel like there's a whole lot of, you know, conversations about it. And I've been pretty vocal about, you know, hey, maybe we should listen to scientists, you know, like that seems like an intelligent thing in my brain. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, I don't think I'm like an expert on any of it, but I do know where the experts are at. And that's important to know.
And don't panic. There's not a question coming out. So what do you think? No, I'm not interested in that and whatsoever, but I am interested because you mentioned Twitter and you've said his name already in this podcast. What do you think about Elon buying Twitter?
I think it's great. I mean, I feel like he's done a lot of good with his past businesses. So I'm interested to see where he takes, you know, if the Twitter thing even goes through, I'm interested to see where he takes it. I am cautious about one person being able to decide what freedom of speech means. I feel like that should always be more of a group decision, but we'll see where it goes.
And the other thing to remember is, I don't know what the exact numbers are. I'd be interested. There's the jury rig everything Twitter page. I'd be interested to know what the number of users in the US for Twitter versus the rest of the world. I guess it's easy to Google that, because that freedom of speech thing only applies to US citizens, because it's the only place that constitutional right is. It doesn't mean that other places don't have freedom of speech, but the way that Elon's talking about it is only applicable within the borders of the United States of America. So it'll also be interesting to see how that plays out for the rest of the world using this world marketplace, I guess.
Right. And what I think most people don't realize, though, is that like that expression, freedom of speech, only applies to a government and its people. So like a platform like Twitter, they have a terms of service and they get to decide what's happening with the freedom of speech. And so it's like, once, if Elon does own Twitter, then he does get to decide what freedom of speech means. Because the phrase freedom of speech only applies towards government officials and what they can do to like reporters, you know, and people who are like reporting on the news and stuff like that. Civilians are always protected. They can say whatever they want about their government, but that's not what most people are talking about when they say freedom of speech.
Very cool. Hey, Zach, it's been such a pleasure to catch up with you. I'm genuinely very thankful, and you can hear from, I guess, some of the specific things that I'm a fan of the channel, and I like to watch your content, and I you know, catch up on what you and your whānau is all about, sort of thing. So I'm really genuinely grateful you gave us some time to have a bit of a chat today. If people are watching, there's the website jerryrigeverything.com if you want to check out more about you. And if you want to see that spectacular photo, you just go to the About tab. And there's the spectacular photo. And then also you're all over socials as well. There's that terrifying tool that makes all those horrible scrapey noises. I guess there's nothing else to say other than, oh gosh, that's terrifying. That noise, man. It's what is it? ASMR? That's like the anti-ASMR. It's the fingernails down the chalkboard. But I guess as you say, in fact, just to show people, again, this particular image. There you go. What are that? A new Samsung that you've decided to scratch an image. It's actually quite a good image. It's actually quite artistic, actually. I'm quite impressed.
Yeah, I drew a dinosaur on the back of a tablet. So and there's a volcano there, and it's a pretty darn good-looking dinosaur.
I like every time, and obviously it's a conscious decision. You've got the little separating tool here with jerry-rig everything on it. So that's cool. I like it. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you. As much as we can, please pass on all the best to your lovely wife and enjoy your son. And other than that, I'll just say thanks for joining us today. Thanks for being with us. And I look forward to new content and where you go from here, because we'll be watching from this side of the world.
Sweet. Yeah, thanks for having me. It was nice meeting you.